Okay, let's talk Zika. This is getting scarier and scarier, Paul. You know, for a while, we were saying, you know, it's just like the other stuff that has come up and gone away, but it's not, is it? It really does seem to be offering a real threat. We have the first example of somebody getting it in the United States, in Puerto Rico. And what are your expectations? Is it going to get much worse before it gets better?
Well, I think it could. And we're hearing from some of the agencies and the institutions that will do the monitoring of situations like this and do research. And I believe there's well over 400 cases now that relate to Americans who were probably in travel. And of that batch, I think...
400 people, let me get that straight. 400 people have contracted the disease?
Zika virus.
The Zika virus.
Right.
And they're back in the United States now?
I believe that's correct. And of that, there's a great number, 70-some, from New York alone. And, you know, the some of the health-related groups have indicated from the federal perspective that it could be a greater issue, more threatening issue than they imagined. And so I think it's one of those crises that exists out there right now for this a health crisis. Not only the Zika virus, but also the heroin epidemic and the drinking water, the contamination by lead of drinking water for Flint, Michigan, and perhaps other spots in the country. These three health crises should be addressed with significant resources and perhaps public policy to accompany that. And we're not doing that. I think the investment you need here to do the research and then perhaps to develop whatever response, a vaccine or whatever, is required of us. And to just cast that aside and put it on the pile of unfinished business is not good enough. So this Zika virus is real. And to suggest that we're going to pay for some of the response by undoing other good programs, robbing Peter to pay Paul, so to speak, is...
And is that a Republican position?
Yeah, it's an irresponsible position, I believe, to address perhaps a reduction in emergency services response or some other crisis, healthcare crisis. You know, this is a new arriving on the scene situation. It should have its own dollars sent its way and not shaved dollars from some other program that's equally worthy. And so, you know, it's another bit of unfinished business that needs to be addressed. Before the in the next few weeks, I believe, because, you know, we're going to see more and more situations out there that could cause grave concern.
Yeah, it's so easy for me to put myself into understanding this thing. You know, we have a beautiful grandson. He's 2 years old. Our daughter spent a good deal of time writing her doctorate down in Latin America. You get this feeling there, but for the grace of God, you know, anybody can...
Well, and then the Olympics being hosted
sure.
in Brazil. I mean, people, there's justified concern. And again, the way this country has always responded to issues like that has been to invest in research, which gives us hope and provides remedies, either good treatment or perhaps cures for various situations. But the Zika virus is real. To trim Ebola or to trim emergency services responses is not the answer here, you know. And these crises that loom and loom large are real in the lives of people. You know, when you ignore, and it was a government ignoring a situation in Flint, Michigan, and now to cause that mental stress on individuals and families and to perhaps have impact on the lives of children that can create developmental disabilities is not only irresponsible, it's immoral.
Speaking about problems, Paul Tonko, let's talk about opioids. I know you have a bill, and I know everybody's solution is to give the stuff, if somebody's dying of heroin problems, that you can use this substance on, Narcan, is that what it's called?
There's Narcan or buprenorphine.
Yeah, that's one thing. But we that doesn't get to why people are using these drugs in the first place.
Well, you know, it's a problem when we're less than 5% of the world population and we're consuming 80% of the world's illicit drugs. That's a huge concern. So, yeah, there's need for public information, public education. But at the same time, some of these lives are lost if we do not have that response. And we have an artificial cap that we've placed on specialists MDs that administer drugs like buprenorphine to addicts that are capped at 100. So if your patient 101 or 102, the door shuts on you. And so the bill that I've done with Dr. Bouchon, who's a Republican in the House, in a bipartisan manner, is to lift that cap. I was hoping to do it at about a 300 level. We settled on 250.
So let me get this straight. What happens at 100 or 300?
Well, there's a cap of 100 patients that an MD that's working with the addict has to be able to treat that person.
Right.
So if you're at that threshold of 100, the story's over for you as an addict going to visit
the next patient who may want to do that.
Right.
And we know that there are some doctors who specialize in the treatment of drug addiction.
Right.
So therefore, to put a cap on them makes no sense at all.
Well, you know, there might have been sense in that. You know, there's
some people were abusing. Some people were abusing their prescription process.
Right. So whatever that concern is, let's be a little more realistic, because the bigger concern right now is getting people into treatment. And so if you capped it at 100 artificially, you know, still we're capping it artificially at 300 or 500, as had been proposed by Senate and myself in the House. We settled on 250. It's a vast improvement. It's 150% improvement. Not only did we raise that cap for the MDs to 250, but we authorize physician's assistants and nurse practitioners to be able to also do that with the appropriate training, so that we've increased the field, the professional arena count, and raised the individual threshold for that professional to 250.
So how do you keep how do you keep the bad physicians, the Dr. Feelgoods, from overprescribing?
Interesting. We have HHS involved in the reform legislation also, to give them new powers, better powers of revocation or suspension.
And HHS is, I'm so sorry,
the Health and Human Services group in Washington. They, as an agency, a wing of an agency, now have greater opportunity to scrutinize the professionals, and they can push for revoking or suspending a license. So that revocation and suspension opportunity will remove some of the bad actors if they're there. And again, increasing the threshold and then growing the field of professionals by including practitioners, nurse practitioners, and physician's assistants. But you know, you look at this growing situation.
You look at Elvis. Epidemic. You look at Elvis and Prince for two. Mm-hmm. There's a growing evidence that Prince was.
Well, yeah. I went to a New England discussion. Well, obviously, I don't cover New England, but we're pretty close to the area. And Richie Neal, who was putting this forum together, Congressman Neal,
our great friend.
He's a great guy, great friend. And he said, "Look, Paul, you have such an interest. I co-chair the Addiction Caucus in the House, a bipartisan caucus." He said, "You've got great interest in this. I got involved with these issues because of my work with mental health parity in the state assembly when I served there." And so they invited me into that discussion from a New England perspective. The statistics were
frightening.
Beyond frightening. And, you know, I've lost neighbors and friends to this disease, and we do have to see addiction as an illness. If we do not, the stigma attached to this and the denial of treatment is just not going to be the answer.
It's our wonderful friend Paul Tonko. Paul, we love when you come in and you talk to us. You are just you're wonderful to this radio station, and we very much appreciate it.
Well, your radio station is wonderful to the people that I serve and beyond. You inform us tremendously well, so thank you.